doing Malachim Aleph, the Perek Yilchas. So we're up to the part of the book. So far, there's basically a famine. A drought, and a famine. There's no rain by Eliyahu's command, right? The Jews were doing Rosh Hashanah, and he basically declared that there wasn't going to be any rain unless they did tshuva, unless he says so. Okay? So, and then there was this whole thing that he went and he got fed by the ravens, then he got fed by this woman, and he brought back the woman's kid, fine. Now we're up to the next phase, where it says like this, Perek Yilches, Vayhi Yomim Rabim Udvar Hashem HaYaliyahu. Oh. Basically, so Vayhi Yom Rabim, it was many days, Udvar Hashem HaYaliyahu Bashan HaShalisha Slamar. So it was in the third year of the reign, of the drought. Hashem spoke to Eliyahu, Lechara es Achav et Namat Rapnei Adama. So go appear to Achav, and I'm going to give rain, you know, on the earth. Okay, why? Why now all of a sudden? So the Radak says, "And the matar ki mimnei ha'ra'av shavu rabim b'shuva ve'hitivu darchecha." So because of the famine, many of the people did tshuva. Right, the idea of the famine was to pressure them and for them to realize that their way of life is corrupt and God's punishing them, like this says, So that was basically what was happening. So it was basically a curse. That what happens is that they're not following the Torah and they're getting punished. So it's caused them to realize, wait a second, this whole Zara thing isn't really giving us the dividends, you know, what we thought we'd get. They realize it caused their chayit, and many people did tshuva. So it worked. Additionally, there are 7,000 people who never even worshipped Baal in the first place. Okay, never even worshipped Baal in the first place. So what do you think about that, about those two answers? He's giving two explanations about why now, what's happening, about Namatar Alpine, right? Why is...
I don't understand the second part. If there were 7,000 people who never... in the first place, why should they have to suffer to begin with?
Right, exactly. So if you're saying that 7,000 people, what changed? So, I mean, they had the famine in the first place, apparently, even though there were 7,000 people. Klal Yisrael as a whole was corrupt, and therefore there was this onesh. So I understand the first pshat that's saying because the famine they did tshuva. That's fine, that's something that changed. But it's saying also there are 7,000 people who never chotim in the first place, so what? You know, how does that change anything? Right, you follow the question? Yeah.
Maybe they should have had a good influence on the others to try and keep the people in Baal and Zara. The people in Klal Yisrael are even Zalazed, they're responsible for the actions of others because they allow them to be taken in by Achav and his men.
Okay, and therefore what?
So that explains why they might get the onesh. Oh. It doesn't explain why the onesh would be taken away.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't have a problem so much with that. It's just, look, just because there's certain small amount of people who are tzaddikim, fine. They didn't bow down to Baal. Oh, yeah, they should have helped the people. They're one seabor. Yeah, Klal Yisrael and Zara, they're responsible. But now he's explaining why the Gzar Din was kind of changed. So somehow, because they never really did it in the first place. That doesn't really explain it. You would have assumed, what about the fact that, look, apparently the whole time it happened.
Right.
So apparently, even though the rest of the people were, you know, so obviously it happened, despite the fact there were 7,000 people, it happened anyways. So now why did it change? Because those 7,000 were good the whole time.
Yeah.
So it must have changed because we all did tshuva. So what's the point of saying, oh, Mimnei, these 7,000 people who didn't, right? Come in.
Who is that? Sorry, I locked the door.
Yes, it's just a feeling we're thinking about a problem.
Okay.
It says, at the end of 3 years of the famine, of the drought, so Hashem told Eliyahu to go and talk to Ahav and tell him that he's going to bring rain.
Okay.
So why now? So the Radak says two reasons. First of all, because of the famine, many people did tshuva. Makes sense. And second of all, there were 7,000 people who never worshipped Baal in the first place. Right? So we want to know, what is the 7,000 people who never worshipped Baal in the first place have anything to do with it?
So maybe, if not...
Sorry, let me explain the questions, right? So notice, who cares that there are 7,000 people? But apparently, the Gzar didn't happen despite those 7,000 people. So that's not a reason to stop it, because those 7,000 people...
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe the Gzar din would have been a much longer drought if not for those 7,000 people. So the schus of those 7,000 people shortened it.
Okay. You mean... those 7,000 people deserved, apparently they were also somewhat sinful, they didn't stop the tzibor, you know. So they deserved, the drought happened anyways. But what happens, the longer and longer drought goes, the more devastation, the more suffering, the more death, the more illness, the more everything which is going to happen. So it could be it's saying, right, that in Tzibor, these 7,000 people, they didn't deserve that much. Because it's true it happened. But just because it happened doesn't mean that's it. They might as well not exist. In other words, the drought does affect them, and they are somewhat culpable. They're part of the tzibor. But do they deserve to be starved out to the point of ad infinitum? Apparently, it could be saying, it's like you could argue, is that they deserve to be part of the drought. But when it comes to a certain point, we got to a point where it's beyond what's just for them. So then God, who is saying the other pshat, so he's saying maybe stopped it because of that, became too much. Unless there was, if the whole Klal Yisrael was corrupt, then maybe God would have kept it going, because they deserve even more. But there comes a point at which there's like a quantity involved in the Gzar Din. So it could be they deserve it up to a point. So that's the second pshat. I mean, as I say, it could be two factors. One is even the bad people did tshuva, but also the good people, comes a point where it's been 3 years already. So it's saying this is already too much.
3 years during a time when they didn't have refrigeration or freezers, it was
it's a long time.
It was a long time. Probably the only thing that they have left is heavily salted or whatever they used to preserve at that time. I don't know what they used to preserve it.
Right.
But what were they eating after 3 years?
I don't know.
Well, anything like fresh though,
promise.
Grow at that point, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to get into that. It's hard to get into the facts.
The animals have nothing to eat, so they die. Fruits and vegetables are not growing. But what are they eating?
It could be that there's a drought. It doesn't mean everything necessarily dries up. It could just be the rivers get lower, there's less water, there's still... I don't know. Apparently they didn't all die.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's hard to get into... It's hard to figure this kind of thing out, you know?
Maybe they were living on fish.
Maybe. It's hard to know. I mean, it's an interesting question. It's kind of conjecture. So you'd have to really, research the times and the
fish and birds. Right?
Yeah, okay, right? So that's just saying. So that's an interesting point, is that Gzar Din, just because you're subject to the din, and tzaddikim were subject to the din, doesn't mean they're subject to it to the fullest measure of the din. So it could be the din would have been further, but they said it's close to those 7,000 people caused it to get shortened. Okay, fine. So, but the bottom line is it's like the time has come. It's basically what God's saying is now it's time. Go to Ahav and basically, I'm going to give rain. Go to him and I'm going to give rain on the ground. Okay, fine. So let's see what he did. This is his plan. So you'd think, what would he do? Go to Ahav and tell him I'm going to bring rain. And there's rain. Poof. That's it. Sounds easy enough. Rav Chazak b'Shama. He went to Achav, and there's a very, very heavy famine in Shama. Vayikra Achav elavad Yahu, Asher elavayis. So at this time, right around this time, Achav called to Avad Yahu. He was a Navi. And he was in charge of the house of Achav. He was like his head servant. He was a very big Yari Hashem. He was a tzaddik. He, Bahachris Izebel, is Nevi'e Hashem. So Izebel was the wife of Ahav. She killed the Nevi'e Hashem. All the Nevi'e Hashem. But Yikachov Adyohu, Me'a Nevi'im. So Adyohu at the time took 100 Nevi'im, Vayachbi'im, and he hid them. Chamishim Ishba Ma'ara, 50 in each cave. Two caves. He split them up into two caves, and he fed them. He hid them. Vechilkalim Lechem Amayim. And he fed them bread and water. So apparently there was bread and water, some bread and water available, in Ahav's house at least, and he was the king. And he was a head servant in Ahav's house, so apparently he was able to siphon off a fair amount of bread and water for these 50, 100 of you. Okay, so it's explaining to you how he was here as a Shemot. How was he big, you know? Obviously, this is a punishable death. Here it is, he's Evel, the queen. Is killing all the Nevi'im, and he's secretly keeping them alive, and only keeping them alive, feeding them from the king's palace. You understand that's not a... That's why he's Yer Hashem owed. I mean, apparently, look, he said, we have to keep the Nevi'im. And despite the risks of his life, what's he going to do? So that's... you can imagine how difficult of a thing that is to do, and how great of a perfection that indicates that he did do that. Okay? I don't understand altogether. I mean, 100 Nevi'im. I didn't know there were 100 Nevi'im. Like, don't we have a history like 42 or something? I don't know how they have all these Nevi'im.
So, and he's counted them as 7,000 people?
Probably. But either way, just a lot of Nevi'im. I don't know. Maybe Nevi'im means something else. Or maybe... The only thing, though, maybe means the number of Nevi'im are people or Nevi'im. There's a Navi that I think the Rambam described. There's two kinds of Nevi'im. There's a Navi who feels like a Shliach to send... The God sends a Shliach to man to teach them ideas and whatever. And then there's like a personal Navi. On his level, he is a level of what, but to himself, to increase his knowledge. So maybe there are much more than a list of the numbers of people who are like Nevi'im, God sent for, to give Moser to the people or whatever. I don't know. I know B'nei HaNevi'im, you have a lashon of B'nei HaNevi'im. B'nei HaNevi'im, I think, means it's people who are like aspiring to be Nevi'im. They're like the sons, like in training, Nevi'im in training. So that you could have more of. But whatever.
If they were personal Nevi'im who weren't saying their Nevuah to the rest of Klal Yisrael, how would somebody like Obadiah even find them? Oh, well, it could be they studied under him. It could be, you know, I mean, he knew them. I mean, he was a part of the Navi circle, so presumably they get around, they hang out together.
So I don't know, it's interesting. It is, I don't really know the answer, but it's interesting. Okay, so this is what he was, this is what Avadyo did. So just give me your context. He was a very big tzaddik. Vayomer Achav el Avadyohu. So Achav told Avadyohu. Avadyohu. Lech ba'aretz, I'll call my name. Go around the aretz to all the springs of water. I'll call on the cholim and all the rivers. Ulay nimtza chotzir. Maybe we'll find some grass. Ispa, right? Some grass. Is that how they translate it there? Ispa.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Ulan is a chotzir and hay. Yeah. Unechaya sosvaparad. And we'll be able to live, cause our horses and our mules to live. Velonachas menavehema.
Grass, is that?
Grass, yeah, okay, good. And the behemas won't get cut off. In other words, apparently, it's interesting. Was they had enough water and stuff for the people, but it's apparently getting running low on the animal food stuff, animal water, and it's saying grass actually, right? So the animal food is starting to run low. Grass, go to the rivers, try to get water. Oh, sorry, try to find grass around. I guess it's saying find grass around the water places, around the springs, around the rivers. Because the animals eat the grass, and we don't have grass apparently in the middle of the land, but in the place near the river, so go around there and try to find some stuff. Okay? So, fine. So apparently it sounds like the people had enough to live, but the animals not. So this is just saying, he's telling, you'll see. They split the land. Achav halach b'derach echad levado. Achav went on one road, one path. Avadyo halach b'derach echad levado. And Avadyo went on the other one.
The king is going on his own errand.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, the king and his right-hand man are going around the country alone, looking for grass to bring to the animals. So I don't know. What do you make of that? don't know. How would you explain that?
Desperation.
But get someone else to do it. I mean, what, you didn't have any servants? I mean, obviously, if he was siphoning off 100 food for 100 people, obviously, it wasn't noticeable, right? So obviously, in the king's palace, there must have been serving thousands of people. And he was able to skim off the top, right? So it must have been he had servants, right? I mean, it can't be the king was living alone, and somehow Joe was getting food and water for 100 people. Right? It must be there's a palace, and after all, he's the king, right? So what's the deal? He doesn't have any servants. He has to give his top servant, right?
Strange, huh? Then he's going himself. So.
Asher al-Abayis, right? Avadio Asher al-Abayis. So he was the guy who was in charge of his house.
He doesn't want anyone to know.
Okay, why not? Right.
Maybe he wants to surprise them when he finds it and, like, get the glory.
Right. Right. As I was saying, something like that, right, is that the king, you kind of people take security in the king. So even if people are dying in the countryside and starving in the countryside, but the king is prosperous. If they know the king's animals are dying or are starving, and the king needs to be begging around, looking around for food, it's like the king has to keep a smiling face, a happy face. He has to look good. He kind of gives the people, you know, because people are going to start getting nervous and they're going to start asking questions. What's going on? Is it maybe it's because of Avodah Zarah? Maybe you're not a good king. You started a revolution, a rebellion, right? Because it's tied to the king. It's tied to Avodah Zarah. And he's the king who's leading them in this whole thing. So the people could start turning on him. So the king has to at least make it like there's still, it's not the end. The king at least still could, is not a beggar. Once a king becomes a beggar, it's like they don't have, you know, they have nowhere to hang their hat on. At least if they're king. So the king's animals is bad. So his servants, once the servants know, then they find out, other people find out, it becomes like a widespread thing. The king's desperate, then the country's desperate, then the people feel like they're doomed. So it could be he wanted to keep this thing on notch, and apparently he could trust Ovadio, he was on his, around his house. And it's kind of interesting how, you know, he had this Russia, the biggest Russia. I mean, Achav was like the worst, you know, and he was this big Tzaddik who was like, you know, it's interesting, but, you know.
Is it because Yahu working for him because he's the king and he has no choice here?
It seemed that way. But these things have happened, you know. I mean, Daniel worked on the Nebuchadnezzar and Mordechai on the Achashverosh and Esther, you know, these things somehow happen. You know, so they can end up in high places in this world. So, and Yosef on the Paro, right? I mean, these are somehow we get, it does happen that way. Hashgacha sees to it then, you know. Okay. So, fine. So they did it.
Esther.
Right, Esther. Vayu v'derach. So Vayu was on the road. V'hine Eliyahu l'grosso. And sure enough, Eliyahu came to greet him. And he recognized him. And he fell on his face. And he said, "Is this you, Eliyahu?" I mean, Eliyahu was a famous Navi. People recognized him. You know, so he was. So he recognized that you, Eliyahu. And not only that, Eliyahu. You'll see. Ani. Yes. Lech emar ladonecha hine Eliyahu. Go tell your master, Achav. I found Eliyahu. Vayomer, Avodio says, "Machatasi, what's my sin? Kiyata nosin as avdecha biarachal amisin. You want them to kill me? Chai Hashem al kecha. Im yesh goyu mamlacha shalosh shalach adoni shem vakchecha. I swear, there's no nation, no kingdom, which my servant, my master, hasn't sent to seek you. Vamruayin, and they all said, we don't know where Elio is." They made them swear that they don't know where you are. Now, Ato Omer, you're telling me, Lechem Radanacha, Hine Eliyahu? What, I should just go and say to him, oh, by the way, I saw Eliyahu. He says, hi. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to go away. then the spirit, wind of God, or a spirit of God is going to take you to somewhere, who knows where. Somehow you disappear. You have a tendency to disappear. The whole, he's searching the whole world, can't find you. Now I'm going to walk away. Uvasi lagid l'achav. I'm going to go tell achav. Right? And he's not going to find you. Aragani. He's going to kill me. Right? I can't just load it and just let you go, walk away from you and go tell him. And I fear God from my youth. I'm a tzaddik. This isn't fair. It's not you're putting me to do it. It's an unfair request. Hello, who got lo donates shorisisi? Wasn't it told to you that which I did? Baharo gizev los nevi Hashem va'achbi min nevi Hashem mea ish chamish shemesh v'mara chalka mechal mayim. Don't you know what I did? I hid these when she killed all the neviim. I hid 50 in each cave, and I fed them bread and water. V'ata ata omer, and now you're telling me lechem adonecha hidne Eliyahu aragani. He's going to kill me. So he's like pleading to him. First of all, he's just telling him it doesn't make any sense. Crazy, I'm going to get killed. And then he's saying, so you'll say fine, but look, I don't deserve it. Don't you know about my tzidkus?
But I don't understand. If he is a tzaddik and Eliyahu is a Navi,
right,
then why would he question what Eliyahu is telling him to do? Because he knows Eliyahu is a great Navi, and he's telling him that he has to go to Achim now. Why would he start saying, oh, I'm going to get killed if I do this?
Because he will. He's using his mind and he's saying it's a stupid
line. But Eliyahu knows the consequences of what he's asking. He wouldn't ask.
We don't hold by those things, though. I mean, we don't hold like a blind acceptance of his love just because he's a smart man. I mean, he's saying something that's just stupid, so I'm just going to make a request. You have a right to question it. I mean, look, Avram Avinu, God says I'm going to destroy Sodom. And Avram Avinu says, look, is you going to do an injustice? How could you do such a thing? So how could Avram Avinu, doesn't he know that Hashem is just? But he wants to understand. He's making a request. And Moshe, God said, I'm going to destroy Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, please don't. And this, and you hold tefillah. I mean, the Navi is not a weak man. A Navi is a person who uses his mind to the highest of his degree. And if he sees that it doesn't make sense, then I don't care who will you. I don't care who's saying it. It doesn't matter. You know, they say, there's a Gemara sometimes says. He says, someone says a Sfara. He says, I don't care. Even if Yeshua ben Nun said it, I wouldn't accept it. You know, who I say that? You know, so we don't hold by like that kind of, you know. And you'll see, he was right. We'll see, you'll see what happens. By the way, as an aside, why did he hide them 50 in each cave? Why did he do that?
Reminds me of Yaakov when he went to meet Esau.
Right. Sounds that way, right? Yeah. Right, and he says why. Because in Yavoi Savikani, Shara Fleta, right? That if something happens.
Okay.
So what's the deal? I mean, he knew we need Nevi'im. Klal Yisrael needs Nevi'im. We can't function. These are Balei Masor, these are highest level people, right? So he knew that if they all get killed, then we're in trouble, right? So he knew he had to preserve the Nevi'i Hashem. That's why he did this. That's why he risked his life, because he knew it was important. Because Klal Yisrael needs, these are like our lifeline, is the Nevi'im. So he knew that to hide them 101 cave, it's true you want to save them, but he knew he had to be a chacham how to save them, because it's a risky plan. I mean, you hide them in a cave, all you need is one person to find them, and that's it, they're dead. So he figured, if he hides them 50 and 50, if they get caught, so they'll get caught, and he'll figure, so he's not going to hide them in 100 caves. Because it could be like, if you hit them in one, if you find one Navi, then people will start thinking, oh, there's a bunch, and they'll start going on a mission, looking all over the place for the Navi'im. You know, but he hide them 50 and 50, so it's a good amount. So you figure he's going to come to the cave, and he's going to figure they caught them all, right? Yaakov would figure he caught them all, and that's it. And only that, also, there's a practicality of it. It's like it's not so easy to feed 100 people because it's going to have to be bringing food. You know, you don't have too many deliveries. Apparently, every delivery you make is going to be like has to be sneaky.
Draw attention.
So you want to do it. In theory, one would be the best. Just have it in one delivery, and that's it. But the problem is, it's too risky. So apparently, two is the proper. Proper thing for you. Even if they catch one, so then still Klal Yisrael will still continue to exist. But it's interesting, though, is that he took a risk, but he was intelligent about it. You know, he wasn't just not a guy willing to just be Moser Nefesh, and you know, he realized you have to be smart about these things. So he made a good plan. He was a chacham ahead of them. Yeah. Okay. Good. So that's his taina. So he's making a taina to Eliyahu. He says you're making an unfair request to me. Layomer Eliyahu, Chai Hashem Tzvakos, Asher Amati Lefanav. He says, I swear by God, Ki Hayomer Eliyahu, I'll appear to him. Don't worry. Go tell Achav that he found me, and I'm not disappearing. I'm going to show up. Don't worry about it. don't get nervous. I'm going to come. It's interesting. He didn't, like, go with him. He said, I'll go.
Why didn't he disappear that fast?
Yeah, it's interesting. I know, it's a good question. What happened? So he told him, you know, I'm going to go. Yeah, he didn't say anything. He told about it. Then Achav went to Gedaliah. It's a good question, I know. Why, you know, why didn't he just go straight to Achav? If he goes straight to that, straight to the top.
Maybe he stopped looking for grass.
So what?
He stopped from looking for grass. For whatever reason.
I mean, it's not clear, though, that maybe that Eliyahu was necessarily looking. I mean, maybe Enochlam, if he would have found the Achav, that would have also been good. You know, like, it's not clear that he necessarily sought out Obadiah as much as that's who he bumped into. Perhaps. I don't know.
Or if he's concerned, Achav will deny it. You know, whatever he says, Achav will just ignore it. If he says something bad, if he has another witness, then he can't do that.
He just couldn't find Achav, so he had to. The person who he found was
over. Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. It could be that's just what he did. He found him. It's not clear. I mean, it would be a good question if we knew for sure that that was his plan, that he sought out Obadiah instead of Achav. Then you say, why didn't he seek out Achav? But maybe not. I don't know. Not sure. It's not clear from the pasuk that he was specifically trying to avoid Achav. But we can keep the question in mind. I mean, we'll see as we go through. We keep the question in mind. Maybe there's a reason for the plan. And we have to see his plan. We don't know his plan yet, so it's still premature to answer the question. We'll see what happens with Achav. But let's keep it in mind. That's a good question. Okay, so what happened? Vayomer Eliyahu. Chai Hashem Tzavaka. I'm sorry, you already did that, right? Vayikiros Achav is Eliyahu. So when Achav saw Eliyahu, Vayomer Achav, Elav. Achav said to him, Atozeh Uchar Yisrael, is this you who's disrupting the Jewish people? Right? He's calling him, you're messing around with the Jews. Here it is, you're causing all this trouble, you're a troublemaker. Right? Troublemaker, because you're causing all this rain, all the Jews. He's basically accusing him of starving out the Jews. So, Vayomer, lo achart yes Yisrael. I didn't do it. Ki emato, beis avicha, be'azavcha mes mitzvos Hashem, betelecha chori abalem. It's all you. I'm just basically, you know, you're the chotem, and that's the deal. When you do a chotuchet, then Klai Yisrael has onesh. And this is because of you. You're the one who's leading the charge. So don't blame me. V'ata shalach kivot elai es kol Yisrael al har karmel. Gather for me all the Jewish people. So notice he's not just saying, okay, I'm bringing rain. Right? That's not kind of what God told him to do, right? But he's making a whole plan now. Gather all the Jews to Har HaKarmel. That's Nevi'ei HaBaal. And not only that, bring down Nevi'ei HaBaal. Arba Me'eros V'chamishon, there are 450 Nevi'ei HaBaal. Nevi'ei HaShera, Nevi'ei HaShera, Arba Me'eros, there are 400. Ochlei Shulchan Yizevel, they used to hang out at Yizevel's table. They'd eat by her table. So bring all the 450 Nevi'ei HaBaal and the 400 Nevi'ei HaShera, and all of Klal Yisrael, all to Har HaKarmel.
Didn't say they were in the Shomron at this time? Before it said they were in the Shomron, and now he's telling them to gather them at
Har HaKarmel,
which is in
Haifa,
like, isn't that, like, really far away?
I don't know, but that's where they met.
You have the map in there?
Yeah, 1 second. Is that where they met, though?
I think they said something about the Shomron.
So, Rav Chozak Bishomron, right. Rav Chozak Bishomron. But it's not clear that's where they ended up meeting, because they met on the road, right? They were looking all over the place.
Maybe they went pretty far out to find bodies of water.
Yeah, right. It's a good question. Why did he choose there specifically? Was that
Carmel's
deliberate?
Like it's the highest point in the middle of Israel. Like,
oh, really?
Right? Isn't it?
I don't know.
It's a mountain. Here's Carmel. It's right near Haifa, the port city. And then Shomron is here. So. Looking for water, they would have gone in the opposite direction. The Mediterranean Sea is too salty.
Well, it seems like he's looking at springs and rivers, right?
Kinneret. Kinneret is where the water is.
I don't know. I don't know. We don't know. No one really tells us why he chose this place. Mm-hmm. could be used far away. It's not clear that they were near Carmel. Maybe it just this was the most appropriate place to do it. They wanted a big, it's tall, it's a high place. Maybe it's a high place. Not clear. I don't know. I mean, we'd have to have clues from the Mefarshim. I haven't seen anyone explain why that was the chosen of the location. So, you know, it's hard to guess. It's a good question. It's hard to know. Okay, so what happened? Vayishlach l'achav v'chol b'nei Yisrael vayikvot tzatzan nevi'im al har Carmel. So sure he did it. He gathered the nevi'im. Vayigash el Yehol kol ha'am. Right? So Eliyahu approached the whole people. Vayomer, and he said to them, Ad masai atem poslim al shnei ha-se'ifim. Famous line, right? Until when are you going to be jumping between the two, like, posts or two sides, two halves? Im Hashem Elokim, l'chu acharav. Im Baal, l'chu acharav. If you think God and Hashem is a God, go after him. If you think Baal is a God, go after him. As they're kind of playing both sides of the fence here, right? As they're, on the one hand, they're worshipping Baal, on the other hand, they're kind of pretending like they're Jews, and they're keeping Torah, and they're holding by God, so it's like an in-between type of a lifestyle. Right? He says, you gotta decide. Being in the middle is not a value. Decide. Go one way or go the other way. They didn't answer anything. And Rashi says, Shlo yodim lachem, they didn't know. They were stuck. They were confused. They didn't really know which way to go. They didn't know how to answer.
All the people didn't know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what he says. Didn't answer. That's what Rashi says. They just didn't know how to resolve it. They were kind of stuck. On the one hand, they had one feeling. On the other hand, they had another feeling. Here, let's see what the Radak says. It's like a lame person. Pisayach b'shtei raglav. He says he's lame on two legs. Someone who's lame in one leg, he'll lean on the other leg. And both of his feet are messed up, so he's going to jump to the other. It's like he can't find a good place to stand. I don't know why he doesn't just stand on both, but whatever. Two thoughts. Right, I see him nachshavos. Einatem yodim levarer bedaitchem mi elokim. You don't have to decide in your minds who's God and elokim mabal. Right, so it says in Tomar the Radak says v'alohim notem achrei abal, v'alohim notem achrei elohim elokim. Right, I thought they're worshiping Baal. What do you mean? They're confused. They're worshiping Baal. So Nemar ki kasher ro ki netzur hagasham im dvar Eliyahu, when they saw that the rain stopped from because of Eliyosha, no Hashem, natal vav machre Hashem, then they started turning to God. Eloshin vihebal hayumatim osam veomrem lohem shelo yanichu avodas abal ki hu teitiv lachem. So but then vihebal promised them, no, don't worry about it, the Baal's going to help you. Vimimnezel hayum postam ashesivim, so they were kind of jumping back and forth. One part of them realized Eliyahu is the real deal here. On the other hand, the Nevi'i Baal were charismatic and, you know, convinced them and promised them the world, and right? So they're confused. They're going back and forth. Right. Fine. He says like this. And then he says, he quotes Tirgum. Let's skip that for a second. Then he says like this. You know, if you understand Tirgum, I'm going to keep going. I'm not giving it. Emas atan poligin lestrain palgan. When are you going to jump a split between two sides? Hello, Hashem, who elokim?
Where are you?
I'm reading still in the Radak. Yeah. If Hashem is the God, polchukad mawi bil chodowi, then only worship him. Hello, ma'atan ta'an, basar baila de lesbet sarach. Why are you going after these gods? There's no purpose for them. God's the real God, and that's it. So you don't need anything else? And this test that Eliyahu is going to do, because there's a test, right? Are you familiar basically with the test? He brings has them bow to their God, and then to Hashem, and we'll get to it. But he does a test. It's possible he did it on his own heart. But because God didn't say, go do a test, God just said, go tell him to be rain. He had trust in God that God wouldn't turn him down empty handed. I'm in the Radak on Chafalf. V'shi yikadle shemo v'rabim. And then it'll be Kiddush Hashem. Umashamu b'dvarcha asisi, because he says that people know that I'm doing this by God's command. Sometimes people realize that it's mashup.
That's the ultimate example of harasha, that you shouldn't normally do this kind of thing, but because in this case he had to do it for the sake of
correct. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Or it's possible God told him to. In other words, I'm not sure whether God told him to do this or he just did it on his own. Aval pisha kazu lo sibra, the Tosafot doesn't say it, but sometimes doesn't say things. Right? He says, but he thinks, Rishon Karo Shem HaKel Amar Lo Loma Yitzchak L'Tfila. Says it sounds to him that basically he did it on his own. Because otherwise, why does he have to daven? Fine. Okay, maybe we'll get back to this. Fine. So Elijah's the Radak then says, and the people didn't answer, it's that they didn't know what to say because they're Misupakim and Davar. Okay, they didn't know. They really, the Radak and Rashi both are saying is they really didn't know. They're stuck. They didn't know which way to go. Part of them was telling them one way, part of them was telling them another way. Right? They were conflicted. And they just didn't know which how to answer him. Right? They were kind of at a standstill, and that's why he had to make this test to prove it. Okay.
We make shopping rules.
Okay. So this is one of the things, I remember Rabbi said an interesting thing about this thing of this, the Musri gave them. Why are you going both ways? If it's God, then go with God. If it's Baal, then it's Baal. I mean, that's not your average Musri shmos.
They're hedging their bets.
Right. But you'd think is, I mean, what is he telling them? If you want to go with Baal, then go with Baal. Like, why is he telling them that? Say, go to Hashem. What do you mean? If you want to go to Baal, go to Baal. Right, it's like a funny type of a musser. Why are you hedging your bets? Isn't it better to hedge your bets than to go to Baal? It almost sounds like you'd be better off in this musser, they'd be better off going to Baal than to do what they're doing. Here they're kind of in between.
If you're going between the two, you're not getting Olam Haba and you're not getting Olam Hazeh either. You know, at least get some Olam Hazeh if you're...
But the Olam Hazeh, I mean, it's not like Baal gives an Olam Hazeh. Exactly. I mean, it's one thing if they're eating and drinking.
The only reason they serve the Avodah Zarah is Kedei Lahatir L'Amitai Arayis, right? So if you're going to go with them all the way.
Because maybe they're, like, one of the reasons why it's
like
they're being affected by the people who are religious and, like, leaders.
Right.
It's causing them to, like, still stay with Hashem a little bit.
Okay.
They're not being motivated by, like, the truth and the ideas of God.
Okay.
So if he's giving, if, like, the leader is saying to them, like, do whatever you want, and maybe that will give them like, the liberty to really make a proper choice. If they're being influenced just by like the...
You're saying it's a psychological statement to give them the push that they need to
like just think clearly about what's going on, about what they're doing.
Right.
Is he using like a form of reverse psychology almost? Like, you know?
Yeah.
Right, I mean trying to get them to freely choose.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it like...
Also, what they're doing doesn't make sense. So if they had, like, any reasoning at all, it would be clear there's no rain and that God is causing that, like, if they thought about it at all. But instead, they just have no principle. They're just being swayed by however they feel at the moment. So, like, if they take a second to, like, think and make a choice, then the choice is clear.
So you mean it's just like a line. He's basically saying go with God, but he's just saying, just think about it, it's clear.
Yeah.
Right.
I have another idea. It's just a possibility. Maybe, like, at this point, if they didn't realize, they're in the middle, and at this point, like, they should have decided, you know? Like, one way or the other.
Right, okay.
So, like, he's just telling them, like, he's just saying, like, choose one way or the other.
Right. Decide.
And, like, you know, and also, like, I don't know, like, maybe he's saying, like, maybe he's saying, like, at this point, if they haven't decided for Hashem, then they're not going to ever decide for Hashem, because it's 3 years of famine, and, like, it's just so obvious at this point, so maybe it's just, like...
Right, but he's not saying that. He's saying is make a decision. If God is Hashem, then go that way. Right?
But then he's also saying, like, go to Baal.
If you think that. But he's not saying you're never, ever going to go. I mean, he's saying you could go. He's saying make a decision. Decide already, right? I mean, that's what he's telling them. But you're saying is that they're never going to go? If they didn't go already, then they're not going to go to God?
Yeah, I think he's saying, like, if, you know, he's like almost, just like...
saying, if you haven't gone to God until now...
your lost cause.
Then your lost cause.
No, he's saying, like, both ways. Like, if you... like, he's saying make a choice, you know?
Right.
Like,
it's almost like when Yehuda Maki said, Mila Hashem Eli, the implication of Mila Hashem Eli is Mi Shalola Hashem, go.
I know, but it's just funny to say it. That's what the question is. It's like, okay, there's an implication, but don't, it's fine, leave it implied. But just, what the idea of saying is, like, if you want to go with God, good. If not, then just go, like, for instance, would you rather, let's say you had somebody who was kind of hedging his bets. You know someone who's kind of from, but not that from. Would you go to them and say, listen, decide, either be from, or just go out and do everything you want to your heart's content. Look, just stop being in the middle. It's just not a...
being in the middle really is worse, though. Because it's like...
but everyone's in the middle.
Right, that's... okay.
And he was teaching...
I mean, there's different middles, you know. There's,
but in this case, though...
in this type of case. I mean, I'm not saying that you do an individual chait. It's not just an individual chait. I mean, everyone does an individual chait. But, I mean, here it's saying is these people were like... worshiping Baal.
Right, it's different if you're telling somebody, you know, you're not... Shomer Shabbos right now, but you could be, and you can move towards it slowly. You don't have to accept upon yourself all of Shabbos at one time. You can gradually become Shomer Shabbos.
Right.
The difference here is, I think he's making a point about Yichud Hashem. Like, you're not by serving Hashem and serving Baal, you're not really serving Hashem because you're making it as if they're more than one God.
Right.
Were they serving Hashem also, or they were just serving Baal?
Well, it sounds like what Doc's saying is they were kind of going towards God because of Elio's thing. They were moving towards him because Elio seemed to be pretty convincing. That's his question. Is I thought they're only doing Baal. He says, yeah, but because of this whole famine, they started moving towards him. But Elio is saying, okay, starting, but you're not doing enough. And he also has a good point, is that that's not worshiping God. That kind of a thing. There's no place for worshiping God and Baal. That's a good point.
Really makes a mockery.
And it's not being scientific, so like they can never get any evidence either way. They won't know. Like they're not getting saved from the rain. If they go one way and they can see if it works,
right,
maybe it won't work, and then they'll know for sure. But if they keep jumping back and forth, that's not a fair test.
Right.
And they'll never know either way.
Right. 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 Okay, that's good. Yeah. What were you gonna say, Rachel?
Maybe it like makes like a whole mockery of like Hashem and ideas if the person is like only doing it halfway. The person's really making a statement that they don't really think it's valid, and like it'd almost be better. They wouldn't be making a negative statement about like Judaism and God if they would just worship the Baal.
Right.
Like you're right, doing both, it's like they really are like rejecting.
Right, it's like creating a false idea of what Torah is.
Yeah.
Like, listen, don't pretend like you're representing Torah, you're representing
the
Megarot.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I remember, I mean, you're all saying good ideas. And I don't know if there's only one point here, but the point I remember of you talking about is maybe a variation on what you're saying here. And it could be similar a little to Yael to what you're saying, I'm not sure, but I think he said, if I remember correctly, that there's something to, like, a person who plays in the middle is, like, there's some sort of, like a person who's sort of religious but not religious. So make up your mind, what's the deal? But it's like, they really don't want religion, they really don't want God. But they feel bad, they feel guilty, so it kind of gives them, like, a religious satisfaction to be involved in, like, you know, doing mitzvot. It's like, they kind of feel like they're bribing God. You know, like people who are like totally corrupt, but yet they do drink Chol Yisrael. I don't know. They like doing all kinds of. They're very firm people, ostensibly. You know, but so like there's an idea of like it's not like you get to feel like you're a good person, but at the same time you're not. But you like you don't face up to your. It's like you don't have to face up to your chait because you're a big tzaddik. And you look like a big tzaddik, and you feel like a big tzaddik, and you do lots of mitzvahs, and you go towards God a little bit, you know? So there's a certain type of an attitude that permits ma'akev tshuva. See, if a person's a rasha, then at least there's a guilt, and there's a realization of who you are. You face the fact that you're a rasha, and you're following Baal. And you realize the Torah says Baal's corrupt, but that's your Baal. You want to go with Baal, go with Baal. Face the fact that you guys are rasha, and you're going with Baal. Baal, 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 that's who you are. You're Baal. But like here, it's like in a certain sense, like they do Baal, and then they feel, oh, no, you'll go to God. Don't do Baal, then you'll go to Baal. And it's like, It's almost like you want Baal, but then maybe you feel guilty. So then you jump to God, and then God doesn't really satisfy your instincts, so then you go to Baal. Then Baal, you feel guilty, and then you go to God. And then it's like almost like the fact that you're in this jumping back and forth, it prevents you from ever turning to God. And as Al said, that's not really worshiping God. That's not really worshiping God. You're just kind of, there's a certain guilt and whatever associated with it, but you're not allowing yourself to truly worship God. You're just kind of stuck in a situation where you're preventing yourself from really, from truly getting to God. You'd be better off if you just went to Baal. And I guess like Al is saying is, make a test, you'll see what happens. You'll see, you'll suffer, you're going to have more famine, you'll start dying, there'll be punishments, they'll realize that it's corrupt and it's evil and whatever. Somehow you'll realize your flaws, and then at least maybe, not only that, you'll feel bad, you'll feel guilty, you'll have a shame, you'll realize that you're away from the Torah, and then you'll be able to do tshuva. Or you won't. But this type of a state, it's like, yeah, you don't have either. You're stuck in a situation where basically you think you're good. See, that's what's bad. It's one thing if a person is a good person, and another person is a bad person. The worst is a person who thinks he's a good person, but is really bad. That person is dangerous. And that's why I think religious wars are very dangerous. You know, like those crusades or something. They felt like they were big tzaddikim. They felt like they're carrying out God's will. And insofar as you feel like you're doing that, then you can do anything. Because you feel like you feel like you're a good person. So that's what's bad. He's saying is that don't be in between. Being in between gives you like a false sense of religiosity and a false sense of your own goodness. And that's corrupt. You gotta get out of that. You gotta get out of that path. But it's an interesting booster. I mean, you have to think into it when it's worth telling that to a person. Because, you know, I don't think your average, nowadays you'd ever do that to somebody. But it sounds like there's a place to do that. I mean, he's really telling them straight. I mean, he's not just playing around. I mean, presumably he's, he hopes they're going to come the right way, and that he has a task behind him, which he's going to prove it. But at the same time, it is an interesting point in Musar, is sometimes it's not worth, you know, you say, look, I'd rather at least do a mitzvah, might as well continue doing my mitzvah. Sometimes, yes, but sometimes, you know, false religiosity prevents you from real growth, you know, and it's important to realize that when you're involved in that, you know, you could be involved in a lot of, you know, a lot of like big showy types of mitzvahs, and they're a big show for yourself and for others to make you feel like you're some certain type of person. But it could allow you to get away with things in your psyche, you know, with the tendencies which are really corrupt, because you feel like you're offset by all your good things. Yeah, so, but I think this is not to the exclusion of all the, you guys are saying good things, like good ideas also. I don't know if it has to be necessarily one point. I mean, on many levels, it's just saying that this thing is, this is no way to go. You gotta make a decision.
This is not the same as a person who's a Beinoni, like we talked about on Rosh Hashanah
I don't think it means a guy's a potay. No, there's a difference between isolated chait and basically you're worshipping Baal. Right. Worshipping Baal, like you said, is true. There's no place for Baal and God. But there is a place for a guy who's a good Shomer Torah mitzvot, but he has an individual chait. Look, there's such a thing as an individual chatam. Not every person is a tzaddik through and through. That's not a... Yeah. You know, so not every person is a full tzaddik. There's such a thing as a Beinoni. Yeah, look, that's for sure. But even a Beinoni, I think it's true. Look, it's true for us. We're Beinoni, let's say. So we have to think. We still could have this trap. Mm-hmm. So even though you're not saying is you're better off giving up the Torah. I don't think that would be true. But for us, for these people, maybe it would be. But even for us, I think we have to be honest with ourselves when we're using our zechusim to legitimize and to assuage our guilt about our chobos. You know, and so the idea could be true for us as well. Is we have to be honest with ourselves and don't try to, you know, feel and act and appear all religious. And sometimes if we're using that, not necessarily we shouldn't do that, but if we're overdoing it and we're giving off an image to ourselves and to others as being more zealous than we truly are, then maybe it's hurting us. Maybe we're better off letting on our true self to us. being honest with ourselves and with others, who we really are, and then maybe we'll be more motivated to do tshuva. But the fact that we feel a little religious, it kind of prevents us from really real soul searching. I think that's a big danger of the current trend of looking from and the whole outward religiosity, you know, because it distracts you from inward religiosity, because you feel it's all about the outward appearances and the way you look, and it makes you feel very religious. And now it's almost like it doesn't matter as much if you're talking Lashon Hara, and your whole life could be corrupt, but as long as you kind of walk the walk and, you know, talk the talk,
and you could the patrol that sneaks into bedrooms of girls and takes away their cell phones.
Right.
What?
Okay. Whatever. Yeah.
The things that are.
The Times reported that in the Nechemya Weberman trial, there was a woman who testified in defense of Nechemya Weberman. This is a defense that the modesty patrol, the normal thing that they would do, and this was, she was saying this as if this is like a normal thing. They climbed into her window one night, and they took her cell phone away from her as a way to prevent her from looking in the internet at things on her phone.
Right.
And she was saying this because she was trying to show that Nechemya Weberman was part of this, you know, group that people who were having issues with their religious issues would be referred to Nechemya Weberman because he was supposed to be the counselor that would help them. This is what the outwardly religious think that this is the right thing to be doing.
Right, but exactly. But the point is, I think it's important. It's important, but it's not so important. It's important for us. It's like we all partake of these types of things on different levels, but we have to be honest, you know? But it's it is a tendency which, you know, we may not be on the extreme ends of it, and we're not in the world where that's what it is, but, I mean, these things are off on, you know, these things are, they may take it to an extreme, which exists in everybody, you know? So that point is, I think, although it's by Baal, it's actually, we say, give up the Torah, it's not worth it. If you can be this middle person, it's not worth it. Well, yes, I don't think that's the case, but at the same time, we do have to be wary of our own, you know, of our own shortcomings, which we overlook because based upon our false religiosity. You know? Okay, so the point is, so I guess what we should do next time is go further, further in the story, what happens. I mean, we have to get now to how he exactly sets up a test. So we have to go through the test, see what happens, and ultimately the question that I'd like to answer is, what was the point of this whole thing? Why didn't, like we mentioned originally, God just told them, presume a simple shot is go and tell Ahav, you're my grand. And you'll see, that's the point here. So what's this whole deal? Like, what's this whole, like, you'll see, there's a big, we'll get to what Ayala mentioned about the fact that this is a Rasha, you're not supposed to bring Karbanos. We'll get, but this is a major scene. One of the most famous scenes out there, it's major. But what was exactly the plan and the objective of this whole showdown? Okay, we haven't seen it yet. I'm kind of giving it a preview, but there will be a big showdown, and the big question is going to be, what's the purpose of it? What's trying to be accomplished? You know, give them rain. It's over. They did tshuva. So now what? You know. Okay, so I guess we'll try to pick up on that next time. Okay, yeah, any questions there?